Welcome to The Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I still own a fleshlight that belonged to my ex who I broke up with more than 5 years ago. What's wrong with me? Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I did, like, I guess it's, is it still a boudoir shoot if you're naked in Central Park?
I don't think so.
A photographer took nudes of me, or semi-nudes of me, in a shirt that I found that got left in my house from an ex. Mm. He forgot it in the laundry, and, like, because we had lived together, and then moved out, and I just had it. Mm-hmm. And it was too big for me, so it became a very small crop top, and then I took nudes in it.
The ultimate act of reclamation. I like it.
Yeah, and I didn't realize until, like, a while later, I was like, oh, hey! Whoops.
I had a pair of boxers that were left at my house by an ex, and I started wearing them as, like, pajamas. And then one day I, like, unexpectedly got my period while I was wearing them. And I just fucking ruined them totally with blood. And I was so sad. But it's kind of an act of justice, it feels like. Just ruining ex's clothes with blood.
Yeah. I have such weird feelings about, like, ex's clothing, like, mostly because sometimes it's good clothing and, like, I don't want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
I wear it. But I also don't want that to be weird.
Yeah. Do you remember I had that really terrible ex and he had, like, lent me a shirt while we were dating?
It's that flannel and right?
Yeah, it was, like, blue and green, really bright flannel. Yeah. It was, like, a nice shirt that I liked. And then we broke up, and a couple weeks later, he texted me, like, oh, by the way, you can keep the shirt. And I was like, I had no intention of giving that back. Like, you did not need to say that.
It has been several weeks. At this point, I've kept the shirt. If I didn't bring it up within, like, days, it's mine now.
What is the statute of limitations on that? Earlier.
Exactly.
I don't know. But so the reason I bring this up is that we're doing breakups part 3 today, third and final part of our little series on breakups. And the first question that I have, which was a listener question, is how do you ask for your stuff back without feeling like a monster? I want to say first, if you haven't heard the song, The Hardest Part of Breaking Up is Getting Back Your Stuff, which is, like, a 90s classic, you should really, like, immediately go and look it up on YouTube, like, right now. It is so, so funny and such a relatable conundrum. But how do you get your stuff back after a breakup?
I have never heard that song, but Patent Pending has a song called Shake Weights and Moving Crates that is basically about the same thing. And it's great. Lost my train of thought because I started thinking about all the ridiculous things they fight over in that song. I think, honestly, the best way, whenever there's something that I know I'm in the right for asking or wanting, like, your things are your things. You are allowed to want your things. Like, that is entirely reasonable. Mm-hmm. And asking for them is really awkward. That's also entirely reasonable. And whenever I find myself in a situation where I'm like, listen, like, I know I'm in the right, I know I am entitled to want this thing, but they're, like, usually it's around asking people to pay me for things, honestly. But my strategy is to assume that they also know that this is an entirely reasonable thing for me to want. And not say, like, hey, can I have those Blu-rays back? Say, when's a great time for me to stop by and pick up my Blu-rays? Do you want to be there when I come get this thing? Or do you want to find someone who can mediate and get it to me for you? And skip right over the can I and go straight to the, so how are we going to make this work? Because... it's mine. I'm getting it. but how is the best way to do this? And I always find that to be a much easier ask.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. During my last breakup, I had lent the person $40 and then also had left my nipple clamps at his house. So I basically
texted him, those were nice nipple clamps, though, right?
These were actually the like shitty cheap ones on the chain, like just like standard run of the mill nipple clamps. I thought they were your wood ones. I wanted them back.
I'd have been like,
no, I don't think I would have left my fancy nipple clamps at a dude's house. I think I'm too protective of them. But so I texted him like, "You have my $40 and my nipple clamps. When would be a good time?" Like, I basically did exactly what you just said. And it definitely did make me feel better, especially because I was the one who had been dumped. And so there's, like, even an extra level of bravery and vulnerability involved in that case in asking for something, because it's, like, you're reaching out to somebody who, like, ostensibly doesn't even want to talk to you or hear from you. So it's pretty scary. But, yeah, I think matter of fact was the way to go. And I also, like, didn't even answer the door. I had my brother answer the door for me and do the exchange. And he had written it in his calendar as like, open the door for the snake, because he just like didn't think that this was a good dude. And that made me happy.
I think one thing that's important there, though, is like, if you are the person breaking up with someone, think about those things in advance and prepare them for the person you're dumping, who cannot think about those things in advance. And will realize hours later, oh shit, they have my fill in the blank, and then we'll have to contact you, and that will be awkward for them. Like, you could plan these things. You could either have it ready or say, like, and we can do, you know, have a game plan, or at least raise it and ask them. But as the person going into the situation with the foreknowledge, I think it's on you to, like, think about things like that and kind of have a plan, or at least a direction.
Yeah, I mean, from a practical standpoint, that makes sense. I will say, though, that it was quite devastating to me when, during a breakup, as soon as I realized what was happening, that it was a breakup conversation, I, like, went into the guy's, like, side drawer to start collecting my things. And I realized that he had already done that. Like, he had already gathered them up, put them in a bag together for me. And there was something that was, like, so devastating to me about that, because it was like, oh, like, you have fully thought this through. You were completely certain about this. Like, I appreciated the practicality of the gesture, but at the same time, it was like, wow, ouch.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah, I could absolutely see that being hard. And maybe in that moment, it might be easier to do something like, you know, and when you want to address getting your stuff, like, XYZ, or find a more subtle way to prepare it, like, just happen to have a bag.
Right.
That you know it will fit it, you know, like.
Yeah.
To be able to make it easier for them.
Yeah. I think the getting your stuff back conversation is an interesting milestone in kind of the breakup process, because, like, if for some reason you want to talk to the person or see them again, it does give you potentially an opportunity to do that, as long as, like, they're on board for that. And so if it was, like, a relatively amicable breakup, then it can be a nice moment for kind of a check-in, like, how are you doing? Are you okay? But then if it was, like, not an amicable breakup, it can be, like, an extremely tense and awkward thing to have to do.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, I'm just recently rewatching Fleabag with one of my partners, and in the first season, she has a partner who, like, always leaves a little toy behind, and it's, like, the sign that he will be coming back, because, oh, he comes back to get that thing, and then they talk, and then they're dating again, and it's, like, this whole thing. One thing that came up when we were talking about that, though, that I'm curious about, is we've talked about this, I think for most of these episodes, as, like, there is one person who is coming into this conversation prepared and knowing that this is a breakup conversation. I'm curious if you feel like you could ever realize in the middle of a conversation that you need to break up with someone and do it during that conversation. And, like, what you think about that. Right, well, because we always see breakups on TV as, like, this explosive thing. As, like, mm-hmm. something happens and you go, oh, we need to break up. And mm-hmm. usually scream at each other in a restaurant and high drama. And then break up. But I'm curious how often you think that happens. And, like, if that's something you could ever see yourself doing. If there's anything that would, like, be that line for you.
I mean, I'm sure that it does happen. But for me, like, just the type of person that I am, I really don't trust my own snap judgments a lot of the time. So I would always want to, like, at least step away from the conversation, reflect, figure out whether I needed to break up with them. Like, remember when I was dating the dude who was, like, super not a feminist, and we had this conversation at his house where he just laid it out there that he, like, didn't believe in privilege or oppression. And in that conversation, like, I did have the thought, like, oh, shit, I'm probably going to have to break up with him. But I didn't think I have to do it right now. Like, I just don't think that it would occur to me to do that. Like, I'm not an impulsive person in that way. Especially, like, about something that is, like, as important to me as my relationships. But what do you think?
Yeah, I agreed, I think. And that's kind of why I raised it, because it's, like, it occurred to me in talking about this that that's kind of unfathomable to me. Like, I can't imagine, even, like on the one hand, valuing my relationships and wanting to create something and wanting to, like, weigh the pros and cons and see if there's something I can do about this to salvage this and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I just can't imagine saying, like, I want to break up with you without any planning on what that sentence is going to sound like coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine not just, like, planning the conversation and also being, although something I've learned about myself, too, is that I have two modes. I can be in my head or I can be out in the world talking to people. I cannot do both at the same time. And that's why I need these moments of, like, alone so much, because I need to, like, check in with my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, really weigh how I feel about things. And I don't think I could if I'm, like, out with a partner in, like, a scenario where I'm sitting and talking to someone. I don't mm-hmm. think I would be able to, like, have the clarity of thought and, like, connection with myself to know in that moment that, like, nah, this needs to not happen anymore. But there, I think there are definitely people who are more impulsive, but are also just more in tune with, like, viscerally how things feel in their bodies and know that there are things that they're like, nah, I just can't do this. No. Mm-hmm. So, nothing I do is going to change the fact that we're breaking up now. Like,
yeah.
And can just decide in that moment.
Yeah. I am so, like, hesitant to break up with someone in a really fast, impulsive way like that, that the one time when a dude called me and told me that he had been cheating on his other partner with me, that he was, like, not actually poly as he had claimed to be, even in that conversation, I didn't say, we need to stop seeing each other, like, we're done. I mean, it was kind of implied on his end, but I remember he said something to me, like, are you mad at me? Do you not want to talk to me anymore? And I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, I need to think about it. Like, I would need you to, like, make amends and I would need to see some real change. But, like, I don't know that I need to, like, blow up this whole relationship. And then, like, over the coming hours and days after that phone call, I was like, no, actually, like, that's not forgivable. So yeah, we are done.
Like, actually, this is not worth salvaging.
Yeah.
I think I'm too much of an optimist, honestly.
Uh-huh.
Like, there, I'm so, like, my first impulse is always, No, it's fine. We'll figure it. It's fine. We'll figure it out. We'll figure something out. We can. This is fine. It's yeah. fine. It's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. which is, I think, a combination of optimism and people pleasing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we're both very prone to like, no, we'll give it a shot. We'll figure something out. Like, I always want to find a way to make something work.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let me ask you this. There are some people who try to do what is known as taking a break instead of just breaking up. I have never understood this personally because to me, it's like, if you want it to be on the table that you might get back together eventually, just say that. But if you're like on a break, especially like in monogamy land where they don't explicitly negotiate stuff like this, like, yeah. you know, there's that famous storyline in Friends where like Ross sleeps with someone while he and Rachel are on a break and she feels that she has been cheated on and he feels that he has not cheated on her. And I think like taking a break leads to these very messy boundaries like that where it's like unclear what is actually supposed to be happening.
Yeah, it's like one foot in the door, one out. And I feel like it's definitely a thing that happens very much in monogamy land. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like it's almost this way of like, hold that spot for me in right. your life
mm-hmm.
Without me having any accountability to you for a while. Can we yes, do that?
Exactly.
like, and then allow me to just come back. And I think that's shitty to both people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's better for everyone to, if you're going to be in a relationship and be committed to whatever that looks like together.
Yeah.
And if you're not, don't. And like, don't hold people to your expectations or standards to act as if they're in a relationship with you when they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that if I was going to take a break from a relationship, I would need to establish two things really clearly, one of which would be, what are the actual boundaries of this break? Like, to what extent are yeah. we allowed to do stuff with other people? What do you expect from me in terms of communication? All that kind of stuff. And then the second thing would be, I would want to pick a specific day when we were going to reconvene and revisit the conversation and be like, are we dating? Are we not? Like, have an end date for this break, because otherwise it can just stretch on indefinitely and it's just confusing. And like, ostensibly the point of the break is to try to figure out whether, right, like, you're trying to figure out whether you should stay together or not. And I think if you have no due date to like come to that conclusion, then you might never really get to that point. Like, it's like any kind of assignment in your life. Like, you need a deadline in order to ever get the thing done, probably.
Yeah. And I think also clarifying, like, what it is that you're really considering and thinking about during that break, right? Like, yes, mm-hmm. it's, do we want to keep dating? But, like, what does dating look like? What are the things that you're... what are the conflicts that brought you here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And addressing, like, what you really want going forward and what you're both, like, what do you have to work on during your break? Are you working on some of your own shit that just doesn't give you the bandwidth for a relationship? Because I think that is a pretty valid reason
mm-hmm.
to take a little bit of a break and say, like, hey, I'm still interested, but I can't commit to putting the time into a relationship right now in the way I need to,
mm-hmm.
Because I have XYZ shit to work on. And what is XYZ shit? Mm-hmm. And I think having conversations around all that is helpful as well.
Yeah. Speaking of messy boundaries, we got a few questions from people who were in a tricky situation where they had to either live with or work with their immediately recent ex, which I get, especially like with the economy being how it is, that like it's expensive to move and you might not be able to, at least for a while. And so then you might be stuck living in a house with this person who you might have a very acrimonious relationship with right now. So these listeners were wondering if we had any tips for how to deal when you have to see your recent ex a lot.
I think addressing that it's awkward.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can talk about it because it's awkward for them too.
Yeah.
And just being like, this is going to be weird. This is going to suck. Mm-hmm. What are the things you're worried about with this? And what can I do to make this as easy on you as possible? And share those same things for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, maybe it's let me know when you're going to have a date so I can watch something with headphones,
mm-hmm.
you know, or so I can not be in the house. Or maybe it's like, hey, can we like take turns having the living room because mm-hmm. I don't want to share the living room with you.
Right.
And, you know, every other day it's, you know, back to high school, A days and B days. But whatever that looks like, whatever the contentious thing is, like, do you want to be in the same rooms together? Mm-hmm. How do you want to communicate? Is it easier if you just, like, text to each other? Or do you want to be, like, friendly and chill and civil?
Mm-hmm.
And outlining those things can be helpful. Also, outlining what things you do need to overlap on. Because there are things... Obviously, you can't cut off all contact, right? You need to manage mm-hmm. a household or manage a job together.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that you are going to need to collaborate on, you are going to need to talk about, and what's the easiest way for you both to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's often really helpful to set explicit boundaries about what you're okay talking about and hearing about. Because there are some people who would be really chill about hearing about their ex's like new dates or whatever, or overhearing it in the break room at work or something. And so it might be nice yeah. to like set those boundaries pretty explicitly. I don't really have much in the way of tips for this. I just know that this would be really hard for me, and was really hard for me when I still had to like go to school with exes, in part because like if I still liked them at all, I would just see them, like, being hot all the time, and it would just, like, make me sadder
about the whole situation. Just being around, being hot.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes people do it on purpose, too. Like, they want their exes to think that they're still hot, which I understand that impulse, but it's kind of mean.
Yeah, I think... I think something you touch on there, though, that's really helpful is that it's reasonable for you to be sad. And mm-hmm. it is going to be harder. Like, it's easier to not be sad when you're not looking at the thing that makes you sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fair. That's yeah. understandable. And it's reasonable that this is going to be hard and mm-hmm. it's going to make you sad. And you're going to have a little twinge of feels every time mm-hmm. you see them. And just, like, having patience with yourself and... understanding that that is reasonable and for however long you're sad about this thing is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And not trying to rush yourself to be okay with it, especially because like they look fine. Why are they so okay? You probably look fine a lot of the time too.
Yeah, you're comparing your insides to someone else's outsides, which is just a rampant problem in our society in general.
Yeah, it's so easy, and it makes so much sense, and yet we still do it all the time, because mm-hmm. it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think recognizing that, like, that's reasonable, and it's reasonable that it's going to be hard to see them when you do.
Mm-hmm.
And having some patience and compassion for yourself in those times, I think is important.
Yep. Wise advice. Another question, how do you deal when your ex is already dating new people and you're not? Wow, this is hard. This is very hard. I think my first tip would be you gotta get away from their social media. Like, I don't think you necessarily need to block them. I think that that can be perceived as an aggressive gesture, even if it's just something you're doing for your own self-care. But maybe you mute them. Maybe you delete a social media app from your phone for a little while. Unfollow, whatever it may be, because it's just like not going to be good for you probably to be seeing this stuff, at least for the first little while. And I always find that I'm less distressed when it's less in my face all the time.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I actually don't have a ton of advice for this one, mostly because jealousy is not my biggest of struggles. I have many, but this is not one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an interesting case because it's not quite the same as, like, poly jealousy, because it might be more of, like, a sadness or an abandonment or something that, like, I don't know. To me, it feels like a slightly distinct feeling from, like, regular run-of-the-mill jealousy. And it can also play into your own, yeah, like, self-perception. Like, it can make you feel worthless, unlovable, undateable, in which case I would recommend, like, spending more time with your friends and like spending more time doing things that you feel like you're good at and that are fun for you. Like, just like remind yourself that you have value as a person outside of this relationship.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about there is also like this idea of fungibility where like it feels like you've been like replaced or like, oh, they just found a new me so quickly. I think is a very common thought for a lot of people. And I think in that, it's valuable to just remind yourself that, like, they're not a replacement. Every relationship is unique, and, like, your value isn't exclusively in your value to that person in one context.
Yeah.
And that their ability to get a new date, and there were scare quotes around all of those words, but you can't see them because this is an audio medium. But that can also be, like, it can feel like society has validated them before you.
Right.
Because it gifted them a partner, and you didn't get one yet. So they have won the breakup. Yeah. which is bullshit. and relationships are not a marker of value or status, rather than a matter of circumstance. They happen to run into someone they like to spend a lot of time with, and one day you will run into someone who you like to spend a lot of time with.
There seems to be a lot of people who give the advice that the best way to get over someone is to get under someone else. And I think it really depends on what kind of person you are, because I definitely know people who have like handled breakups by immediately going on Tinder and finding someone else to fuck or go on a date with. And I have done that. Like, we talked about rebounds last week or whenever. But I think that you should really give some thought to whether that will actually make you feel better or if it's just sort of this retaliatory thing that you want to do because you want to get back at your ex somehow or prove something. Because like, I find if I do things for that type of nefarious reason that it just isn't satisfying, it isn't fun, it leaves me feeling sad and drained rather than filled up and happy.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. This I've been through this. What do I do if my friends are tired of hearing about my breakup but I still want to talk about it?
Relatable.
Yeah.
What do I do when my friends are tired of hearing about anything and I still want to talk about it? Because really, this is just a problem I come into all the time. Enthusiasm and hyperfocus. I find other outlets to get that energy out. Whether I can write about it, whether I... Like, I know you journal a lot, or if I can weave it into some sort of story or piece of fiction or some sort of art. If I have other friends who haven't heard this story yet, if you have, you know, a therapist or a mental health professional that you can talk to about it. If you, fuck it, tell your cat. Like, sometimes what's valuable for me is not, sometimes what I need is someone to hear and hold mm-hmm. space for my feelings.
Yeah.
Sometimes what's valuable is crafting those feelings into words that have meaning and, like, sentences and being able to string them together into a story or a narrative and just communicate it, because the process of giving it meaning into a way that is easily understood by someone else processes it in my own mind
mm-hmm.
and creates meaning for me, right? Because I'm trying to explain it to someone else, I've created meaning for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that just by talking to yourself, just by writing it, mm-hmm. you know, recording yourself telling the story, talking to an animal or a stuffed, talking to a pet or a stuffed animal, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just getting it out of your head is what's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can also just practice that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have sometimes found it helpful to just, like, sit in a hot bath and just talk out loud. And I remember reading in Lane Moore's book, How to Be Alone, she writes about when she was a kid, she would sometimes speak out loud to a person she envisioned as being like her future partner or her future spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that made her feel less alone at certain times. And so, like, that could be a useful exercise potentially.
You don't have to I would grow also out say, of an like, imaginary friend.
It's true. If you're in a lot of distress, you could try calling a mental health helpline. If you are, for example, a queer youth in Ontario, you could call the LGBT youth line. I would just, like, look into what lines are available in your area or in general. And because that can be helpful even, like, to tell the story to a stranger. And they may have resources or suggestions for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can also go, in addition to, like, chat lines, going into forums and, like, mm-hmm. online communities, explore a new community that you haven't been a part of. It's going to be full of people who are possibly having similar experiences who also want to talk about what's happening for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can rehash the story as many times as you need with as many different groups as you can, but also recognize that, like, they also have things that they need to share, and mm-hmm. you can create space for them to also share what's been tough for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will add, too, that sometimes when I have gotten annoyed with a friend for just constantly talking about their breakup, it's either what you just said, which is, like, they are not acknowledging that I also have stuff that I would like to talk about, or I'm not seeing them actually taking any steps to improve their situation, process what happened, try to move on. Like, it's frustrating sometimes to see someone, like, really, like, willfully wallowing for longer than they necessarily need to. And I understand that this is different for different people. It's more difficult for various people for various reasons. I think, like, if you are visibly, like, taking steps toward healing, then that might be easier for your friends to hear and, like, less annoying than just, like, I'm sad, I'm still sad. But, like, at the same time, you deserve friends who will listen to you being sad and being still sad. So, I don't know, I'm kind of torn on that one.
I think it's important to manage expectations, mm-hmm. right? I got a text from a friend today that said, hey, I need advice that I'm probably not going to take on a problem. Are you up for that? And I was like, absolutely! Mm-hmm. And I've heard so many people complain about, like, ugh, I give this person advice all the time and they never fucking take it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was what I loved. He came to me, he's like, listen, I just want ideas. I might not listen to you. And I think I responded with something like, yeah, I love having opinions with zero accountability. Like, great. gladly, you came to the right person.
Yeah.
But being able to go into a situation and say, hey, can I bitch about stuff you've heard a million times before? I don't need you to give solutions. I just need someone to say, oh, poor baby. Like, because sometimes I know that that's what I need. Like, I recognize I'm being a little silly right now, and I just need an external source to go, aw, poor baby, and give me a hug, and then give me some ice cream. And go in, and you can, because I think some of that burnout on your friends' parts can come from, I can't fix this for you. Right. You keep feeling sad at me, and there's nothing I can do, and all I want to do when you're sad at me is make it better. And that's an exhausting place to live in the, like, nothing I'm doing is fixing this. This sad is still happening. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And being able to remind your friends, like, listen, what you can do is listen. what you can do is be present. What I need is someone to just witness this and tell me that it's okay that I'm sad. And telling them what you need can make that a much easier conversation for people. Because I think as a culture, we're really prone to seeing big feelings as a need for action. Mm-hmm. Like, you're having a feeling, what do I do about it? And I think we need more space for to just have the feeling.
Yeah, it's very true. So here's a tricky one that I have run into a number of times. It's really hard. What if you liked their friends and family and you're, like, sad to be losing those connections as well?
I don't really know. I haven't had this. Yeah, this, I haven't really had this experience. Either we've had our own friends, or I brought the friends. So I just keep them now. and I guess they figure it out. I mean, I think the answer here is communication, which has been the answer for a lot of them.
Yeah. You got to find out whether the ex is going to think it's weird if you continue to have some kind of relationship with one of these people. And then you got to find out if that person is going to think it's weird. And at the same time, like, as much as I do think that the ex should be cool with it, ideally, I also kind of think that if you have an independent relationship with someone in their life, that that's not necessarily any of their business. It's not necessarily something that they should have a say over. In the same way as we talk about with polyamory, like, you know, if you really, really clicked with your ex's best friend and the best friend wants to still hang out with you, I don't think that your ex necessarily should have power over that.
Yeah, I think the conversations I don't think the conversations should be if you get to have a friendship, but I think they do get to be a part of, like, depending on the degree of your relationship with all of the people in this conversation and the genre of breakup and all of the events leading up to it. All of these are variables. But I think it can be helpful to make them a part of the conversation of, like, what that relationship looks like going forward, right? Like, if I'm friends with my ex's mom, maybe I don't come and hang out at the house that my ex also lives in.
Right.
You know? But maybe we go get lunch sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe... I think this is really hard when you share friend groups and you have things like big social gatherings. Are you both gonna be in the same place? How long before that can happen again that you'll both feel comfortable? Do your friends now just have to have separate parties for each of you? Because that's weird. And if you're queer, those parties are going to get way too divided way too fast. Because you'll all have dated and broken up with each other. So, yeah, I think discussing kind of how your relationships will overlap moving forward is good, but... Yeah, I don't think anyone gets to say who you get to be friends with.
Yeah. On the family front, like, my mom has been known to email my recent exes to be like, hey, I heard that you and Kate broke up. Like, I'm really sad about it. I'm going to miss you. Which, like, I'm sure she thinks that that's nice. And, I'm sure that it is occasionally received with some degree of positive feeling. But for the most part, that feels... like a pretty big overstep to me. I don't know.
It just has an air of, it was nice knowing you, now you're dead to me.
But I don't think, like, my mom is such a nice person. I really don't think that she means it that way. Yeah. I think she's, like, she's always expressing genuine feeling. But it's, I think that if I received that message, I wouldn't really know how to react to that. But, like, it also, like, it speaks to the awkwardness of that situation and the sadness of that situation, which is, like, a breakup can be so devastating to your whole social sphere where, like, you suddenly can't hang out with these people you used to really enjoy and hang out with. And it is frustrating. Like, sometimes I do want to mourn that in some way. I have been tempted to, like, reach out to, you know, the mom of an ex to be like, hey, like, I'll probably never see you again, but, like, it was really nice knowing you, and, like, thank you for all your generosity, your hospitality while we were dating. Like, you know, it's a really difficult thing to navigate because I understand why somebody might want to reach back out to those people, but I also understand why some people think that's super weird.
Yeah, I'm thinking particularly about the parents of the person I've dated longest, one of my first exes, who, like, were damn near in-laws. Like, I went to their house multiple times a week for something like 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then I just never saw them again. Yeah. Like, we had a regular dinner one night. And then, I guess, a couple of days later, like, I don't remember, but I saw them damn near almost every week. Mm-hmm. We broke up, like, their kid broke up with me. And then I just never saw them again. And that's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, it's weird that you just poof out of someone's life like that. I didn't feel that close to them that I felt any need to particularly reach out to them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is weird that I will just... never see them again. And like, and it and you talked about, like, your mom reaching out, and that's weird, and it is, like, it's weird. It would be received weird. Mm-hmm. It's not but also, like, the fact that what is considered normal is literally just disappearing from these people's lives. Having a conversation with one person and being like, I guess you will distribute my goodbyes to everyone else. You handle that now. All of these relationships I had. Goodbye.
Right. I think it depends, too, on the dynamic and, like, maybe even, like, the privilege and oppression involved. Because, like, I know that if I was dating, a cis man who... like, frightened me at all, and we broke up, and he, like, continued to contact my friends or my family, I would definitely feel slightly unsafe about that, because it would be like, well, what what are you trying to do? Like, what is your end game here? Whereas I think, like, if I reached out to my ex's mom, like, it would not be received that way. It would not be seen as, like, predatory or calculating, but it probably would still be seen as weird.
Yeah, I think it would be seen as clingy because misogyny.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It would be seen as, I think, like, a more backhanded kind of deceptive coercion.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it could get that kind of paint job.
Like, I'm trying to sneak my way back into their life through the back door. Like.
Exactly. I'll just make their mom love me so much, and then their mom will pressure them into dating me again. How many times have we seen that plot line in a rom-com, though? Like, let's be honest. Yeah. I'll just be mom's favorite.
Okay, one more question before we wrap up. What do you do if you see that your ex is, like, subtweeting or vague booking about you? By which I mean, like, posting on social media, just, like, kind of talking shit about you or just saying melodramatic things about the breakup.
Let them do their shit. I don't know. Like, it's about them and their feelings. And if that's how they're gonna do their thing, like... We talked about this in, I guess, the first version of breakups. I don't know. What was it? God, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
We've been talking about, this is the breakup show now. We've been talking about breakups forever.
Yeah, I agree with you that mostly you should just, like, let them do their thing. Although I understand that if they're being particularly slanderous, you might be tempted to reach out and say something. In which case, I think probably the best and most respectful and safest way to go about that would to try to talk to a mutual friend and express your concerns. Because I don't think, like, if your ex is at the point of, like, anger or sadness about you, that they are posting rude things about you, they probably are not going to be super open to hearing from you. And they're probably, if they're anything like my exes, they're probably going to play the card of, like, well, you, like, the breakup was painful and, like, it's my story, so I get to talk about it, which, like, I generally do agree with. I just think, you know, just because we have freedom of speech doesn't mean we should be dicks to everyone. But yeah, I think probably reaching out to a mutual friend is, like, your best bet here.
Yeah, and I mean, also, I think we can define vague tweeting and vague booking, because, like, there are, I don't think it is inherently dickish.
No.
To mention your breakup. And, like, vaguely talk about a thing that happened in your life that you're having feelings about. I think vague tweeting and vague booking is a way that a lot of people process their grief. And there is a degree of vagueness that, you know, people who know both of you are going to know what they're talking about. But they can protect your identity more or less. And I think that's reasonable, and I think if you tread into, like, trudge out into those waters and start, like, sniping shit back or whatever, you're just gonna get into a petty fight that's not good for anyone. But I think there is a degree of difference if they are, like, being shitheads and, like, saying intentionally mean things, or putting a lot of things that you consider private or personal on blast, being spiteful. I think that's stuff that you can either reach out to a mutual friend. I think first to say, hey, is this as spiteful as I think it is? Or hey, is this as obviously about XYZ situation as I think it is? Because recognize that you are also going through an emotional process and you are also probably reading into some things in ways the rest of the world is not. And if you get some outside validation that, like, hey, this, like, legit wasn't cool, it can be worth it to either have a mutual friend or even yourself reach out and be like, yo, you know, I wasn't cool with this bit because of XYZ. Like, I'd appreciate if you not share that. Or, again, depending on the situation.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Get a button that says that.
All right, that's it for breakups. We will be back to your normal programming next week.
I have been Kate Sloan. It's just not working for me.
I've been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And you can check out my other podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's called Question Box. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at The Dildorks, and you can find us at TheDildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us, brings us up in the charts, makes us easier to find, and then head over to Patreon.com/TheDildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way. Help us keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much to Protodome. He did our theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. I would also say if you are in acute distress, there are mental health. If you are in acute distress,
I know you said acute, but I thought you were saying, like, if you're in a cute tub somewhere, or, like, I thought you were saying, like, in a cute place. It was, like, very different. Sorry. I kept riffing because I forgot what I was talking about and hoping that, like, by the time I got to the end of the jokes, I'd get back to the content, and I did not get back to the content.
That's okay. I can answer this if you want.
Great. Yeah. I forgot what we were talking about entirely.
Yeah, it's fine.